unable to clear, and in the back of the net, a stunning start. Shot and a goal! It is Carlson's 19th. Rodriguez is going to go ahead and fire away, and Rodriguez will clinch it!
Welcome to RootsPod, an audio production of RootsBlog and member of the RootsCast Broadcast Network, coming to you in the last week of the regular season. This is Aaron again here with John and Peter, and this is setting up to be an absolutely thrilling last weekend, of USL play. Do we have like a decision day in USL? I actually haven't looked at the schedule to see if everyone plays on Saturday, but regardless, the last round of fixtures are going to be thrilling, and that is in part because of Oakland's 3-1 win at Hartford Athletic this past weekend, featuring three outside-the-box goals. I don't know that that's necessarily a sustainable plan for success, but God damn it was exciting. We had Juan Azacot in the 4th minute, Otar Carlson in the 59th minute, and then Johnny Rodriguez with a real cheeky effort from about 30 yards out in the 3rd minute of second half stoppage time to lead Oakland over Hartford Athletic. They now have 46 points on the season, sit for the moment in 6th place. We'll get to all that in a moment, but let's just talk about this match first of all. John, as you put it on the blog, we named Eduardo Rito man of the match because of his impact on the game off the bench. And let's just talk about this more broadly. There was a lot of impact off the bench in this match. And just how great is it after a season which, for the first 26 games, to pull a random number of matches out of a hat, it didn't feel like we were getting a whole lot of contribution off the bench, to be regularly getting positive performances from guys who are not in the starting 11.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's vital, especially at this point in the season. You've got to have those guys come off the bench and contribute at a high level. With Rito, you know, he came off the bench more so because he was dealing with a muscle strain, but for him to still make that impact off of the bench and, clearly not lose a step despite dealing with a strain. I mean, his presence alone stretch the field. John Morrissey put out a great video this morning that really looked into it and how it led to Otar's goal. I mean, Rito was just pressing the back line into an errant pass that went out of bounds, and he didn't rush back. He just kept his distance, kept the field really wide, and that enabled Lindo to make a run to feed Otar and for the goal. That's why we named him man of the match, was just that impact off of the bench to stretch the field despite not making any statistical things that we're going to see on the rating system that we have available. It was such a difference, and it also, able to move Memo around and move Azucar rather up to Formella's spot. We've said it time and time again that we think Azucar is great in that forward role. I'd love to see him there more. I thought it made a big difference in this game to be able to have Memo, Rito, and Azucar on the field at the same time, for Azucar's speed on the left, Rito's speed on the right, and Memo's ability to pass the ball from a lot of angles. Let's see how that plays out going forward. But like you said, you need everybody from 1 down to 18 in the lineup to make an impact, especially at this point in the season.
And let's talk about Azucar, because while we were very impressed by the impact that Rito made off the bench coming in around the hour mark, probably most rating systems are going to tell you the man of the match was Juan Azucar because of what he did on the field. And in fact, he is the only representative of the Oakland Roots on the USL's Team of the Week this week because of his contributions in this match. So, I mean, Peter, first of all, kind of bullshit that it's just one guy, right? I mean, this is getting ridiculous. This time we're even on the East Coast. We're not even up past these guys' bedtime, but it was definitely a deserving mention.
It was. I mean, we struggled with identifying a man of the match. As Okar, and there's obviously a case to be made for Carlson as well as Rito, and we ended up choosing Rito because of how much the look of the game changed when he came on and how much the Roots' ascendancy came about as with him coming on the field. But as Okar had an amazing game. And, you know, I try not to give the USL Team of the Week guys too much grief. I gave him a lot of grief last season where it felt like we got totally ignored up until the point at which we eliminated the number one team in the Western Conference. But, Azucar certainly deserves the mention, like you said. I mean, his opening goal was great. You know, those bouncing shots when you get real power behind them are so difficult to save. And so even though the keeper was close to it, like he got his hand to the right, like longitudinal plane, but he didn't know where he needed to have it to actually stop the ball. And so he didn't. And so, you know, the Roots have not had many of those comfortable early leads this season. And they, you know, they milked it for an entire half.
And I think a big difference in sort of the strategy between last year and this is the way we're using the bench. You know, I think we're using the bench this time around to see games out. So the first major defensive sub was Joe Nane. Later on in the match, we saw Emre Clemente come back. So that's actually very encouraging for the stretch run that he's back. But, you know, last year it was hold the line for 75 minutes and then bring Bokila on or bring Johnny Rodriguez on and hope that, you know, you still had a chance to get a winning goal. And these days it's let's put two past the keeper, get to the 75th minute and just really try to power this match down. And, you know, assuming that everyone is healthy, and I don't know that we can necessarily assume that, but it is nice to see that Clement is back. It looks at this point like it could really be a winning strategy. Now, you know, I think the XG, which, you know, not a, you know, be all end all statistics, say that the performances actually have not been more dominant recently. Oakland's finishing has just been better, but to my eyes, they look like a more cohesive attacking side through the first hour. And if they can figure out, you know, just how to manage games like this, I think, you know, we know they have a lot of talent. This looks like a team that is ready to be really dangerous in the playoffs again.
You know, just to expand on, you know, the discussion on Azucar, you know, he may have been man of the match if he buries that one on the doorstep there, you know. But, you know, even in his goal, you know, it was just as good of defense as it was offense, you know, to spot the failed clearance, jump on the forward trying to move the ball, eyes not up, doesn't see him coming, steps right into him and takes it for the shot. You know, we've got to have these collective performances now. And like you just mentioned, you know, with the defense, having that stability really helps. You know, hopefully we're getting a completely healthy Emre. Hopefully we're getting Mati back as well. That being said, I don't know if you change from what's gotten you here at this point, which would be Charlie Dennis in the midfield.
Well, that's, I think, actually, that's a good question. You know, with these guys getting back, getting healthy, do you change? I mean, the guys on the field right now seem to have a lot of chemistry. It seems to be working. I don't think that I would change, even though Emre was in the back line for a lot of the really successful portion of the season. We relied a lot on Nane and Fisore at the end of last year. We know what they're capable of, but I think that I would not change. But I mean, do you guys agree?
I play the strategy that we played when Rito was on the field. So that is, I take Formella out, play Azucar as a forward, and play Diaz as our left side, as our left back, or our left wing back. I think that's what's working right now. You know, Formella's obviously a talented player. I wonder if Azokar just offers more goal threat in a way. And so, you know, he having him and Lindo on either side of Carlson, they're just very different players in those outside forward roles that has some creativity that's having some end product right now. And so I agree. I don't change the overall strategy except in the way that Delgado already did halfway through this game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. I would like to see Azokar as the forward and Memo behind him. You know, one interesting takeaway I can pull from my interviews with Noah, it was, I think when he first started Charlie Dennis in the midfield, and when we asked about it, he made a mention that he wanted to reward the players who were playing well. And I think that's definitely his style, where he wants to reward who's doing the things the right way that he envisions. And he'll keep on doing that. I mean, I think in the, you know, in our lineup guesses, I've put Emrah. And he hasn't deviated from that. You know, that I don't think that totally says that, oh, because Emrah's hurt. I think it's because he wants to reward the players who are have them winning. I mean, it's nice to look at the, you know, on our page, it has the wins and losses, and there's a lot of green in there right now. You know, I have not been used to that this season. So I think Noah is the type of coach that wants to stick with what's working, not deviate a whole bunch, and just kind of do things methodically in that way.
Well, it's certainly working. The squad is, what, 5-1-2 since Delgado took over. The only frustrating part about it is that for a pretty significant period of time, everyone else who was in contention for the last couple of playoff spots in the West was losing. And then when Oakland started winning, everyone else started winning too. So despite the fact that they've rocketed up the point totals and now sit with 46, they haven't made quite as much distance in the standings as you might hope. So this is going to be an interesting midweek and end of the season. Let's start with maybe the most interesting for several reasons match. It's going to have a lot of effect on Oakland's playoff hopes. El Paso Locomotive travels to Tampa Bay Rowdies, and Rowdies may or may not have Lawrence Wyk, who was suspended by the USL for racial abuse aimed at a Monterey Bay FC player. It's the reason Monterey Bay has a game in hand right now. The Rowdies have appealed the suspension, saying there's no audio or visual evidence of the thing that Wyk supposedly said. Although if you watch the tape, you can pinpoint pretty much exactly when he says it. There's a pretty obvious reaction from everyone on the pitch. And also the ref was right there. So I honestly don't know what Rowdies are thinking. I guess I have no basis for this assumption other than this is how it works in many other sports. But I would assume that since the suspension is currently under appeal, that he isn't going to start serving it. But regardless, who knows what the locker room is like in Tampa Bay right now. It doesn't matter too much to Tampa Bay. They are locked into the third spot in the Eastern Conference. But, you know, they probably don't want to go into the playoffs on a sour note. But tomorrow, 4:30, that's Wednesday, 4:30 Pacific time, they host El Paso Locomotive. And if El Paso... Right now, El Paso sits behind Oakland, but a win would really put some pressure on Oakland. A lot of interesting matches, though, this midweek, right? So in addition to that, what else do we have, Peter, that it is going to be relevant to our enjoyment of this next weekend's match?
Yeah, so Monterey hosts FC Tulsa in the makeup for the game that the players voted to postpone. And anything other than a win eliminates Monterey Bay. You would expect them to beat Tulsa. Tulsa aren't playing for anything. Monterey are at home, but you know they Monterey have struggled to always get results this season. Obviously, sitting 10th, and so you know that's one item off the Roots checklist if Monterey doesn't get the win tomorrow. Also, New Mexico hosts LA Galaxy 2. Galaxy 2 are now eliminated, but also Galaxy 2 are never playing for anything. They're all playing just to audition for Galaxy 1 or for a transfer to a team where they can get into the first team. So you wouldn't think that would be a huge step down for Galaxy 2 in terms of their incentive to play. New Mexico have two games in hand. They're on 32 games with 45 points, and the Roots are on 33 games with 46 points. So a New Mexico draw makes things really interesting going into the last game week. You know, you'd still favor New Mexico in New Mexico, favor New Mexico to jump up to 48 points and be in pole position to get a playoff spot. But those are the midweek fixtures. I guess in some sense, the thing to cheer for tomorrow, the reason to cheer for a New Mexico loss is because then they can't get 49 points.
Right.
And then we don't end up, that's the only way to avoid a four-way tie scenario on 49 points.
Well, so by the end of tomorrow, Oakland could be in control of their own destiny, right? If New Mexico loses and Monterey Bay... Well, if New Mexico loses, I think that's it. If New Mexico loses...
Yeah, Oakland, then the Roots control their own destiny.
Oakland wins and they're in the playoffs. Yeah.
So taking us over to Saturday, I will briefly step out of the Western Conference and say that on Saturday, Detroit hosts Miami at 1 p.m. Pacific, which is relevant because Detroit is on 54 points, Pittsburgh is on 54 points, and Miami is on 52 points. And I believe that Detroit has the tiebreak on Pittsburgh. So Pittsburgh will know, at the end of the Detroit-Miami game, Pittsburgh will know exactly where they're going to end up in the standings based on their result with the Roots. Ultimately, there's no scenario in which Pittsburgh doesn't want to win, though, because they can either, you know, if Detroit wins, then maybe Pittsburgh can't actually change their standings. But if there's a draw or a loss, then it's a draw or a Miami win, then Pittsburgh has the opportunity to jump someone in the standings when they play the Roots. So anyway, a minor aside there. The remaining fixtures, RGV hosts Monterey. That game doesn't matter from a Monterey perspective unless they win on Wednesday. But if they do win on Wednesday, then that game has some real implications, although more so if the Roots lose than win. New Mexico hosts Colorado Springs. Colorado Springs are safe from a Roots perspective, but New Mexico, again, are right in the thick of things. Sac hosts San Diego, which doesn't matter, but, you know, we always want Sac to lose. And Los Angeles Galaxy 2 hosts Las Vegas Lights.
Jump in, because before we were talking before this, I agreed that Detroit had the tiebreak on Pittsburgh, but I've just been looking at their schedules, and I think Pittsburgh actually has the tiebreak on Detroit for in-conference record.
The USL published standings have Pittsburgh over Detroit in the standings. So I think that's correct.
So, I mean, it doesn't change too much what you said, except that Pittsburgh controls its own destiny with respect to fifth, basically. If they win, they are guaranteed at least fifth. Rather than...
Yeah, I mean, there's a game tomorrow. Birmingham plays Indy. You would expect Birmingham to win that game. If they don't, Pittsburgh have an opportunity to play for a home playoff game again when they play the Roots. And that's like the biggest prize of all that Riverhounds could still have on the table. So cheer for Indy tomorrow for that reason. Sorry,
Birmingham.
Don't. Cheer for Birmingham tomorrow.
We're cheering for Birmingham tomorrow. Yeah, we're cheering. So wait, our rooting interests for tomorrow specifically are going to be Tampa Bay, Birmingham, Tulsa, and LA Galaxy 2, which is an interesting collection of teams to root for. So hopefully this is all just a matter of seeding by the time we get to this point. But Oakland has the aforementioned Pittsburgh Riverhounds this weekend, who have had, I think, Peter, would you agree with me that they have had a very up and down season and currently appear to be in a bit of a downswing?
Yeah. It's funny. I found all of these stats about Pittsburgh that make it look like their season isn't very good. And then I ran those same stats for the Roots and they're not encouraging either. Pittsburgh hasn't won a game since September 4th. Pittsburgh hasn't beaten a playoff team since July 9th. Pittsburgh only has two games with more than two goals scored since April 23rd. And for context there, the Roots have scored three goals in seven games in that period. So Pittsburgh's offense has never been crazy good and is definitely in a bit of a slump recently. This is actually, okay, so goals per 90, Pittsburgh has 1.42 and the Roots have 1.52. That is 12th and 8th best in the leagues. For goals against per 90, Pittsburgh has 1.09 and the Roots have 1.3 for 8th and 12th best in the league. So they are just literally mirror images of each other. The Roots, a better offense and a worse defense. Pittsburgh's offense runs primarily through three guys. Russell Cicerone, Albert Dequa, and Canardo Forbes. Cicerone and Dequa have 12 and 11 goals, respectively. Forbes has 10 assists. And those three guys have all been playing together for a couple of years. So Forbes has been with the Riverhounds for four seasons, Dequa for three, and Cicerone for two. So they've been around the block. You know, the offense knows each other. But as we were just discussing, like, the offense is, you know, it's fine. It's 12th best out of whatever it is in the league, whatever number of teams it is in the league. But, you know, it's not great. And I think it's sort of on the other side of a tier of offense from where the Roots are. But they don't ship a bunch of goals. The Roots have put some goals past recently, teams that don't ship a bunch of goals. But, you know, Pittsburgh's another in that line.
Yeah, it's true. Oakland does seem to be rounding into some offensive form. And also their season-long numbers look a little better if you only include the matches where they were after the switch to the back three. You know, that was pretty weak the first couple of games before they had figured out what they were going to do. But they definitely have a strong offense, an offense that is capable of putting together enough goals to win this. And I mean, this looks like, for as much as we talk about Pittsburgh having a chance to host a home playoff game, they've got 3 points in their last five, three draws. One of them was to Lou City, and one of them was away to Sacramento, though. I mean, those are, all things considered, actually pretty decent results. We talked about it a little bit earlier, John, about how we kind of think we're going to stay the course here, but do you think there's going to be anything new, any interesting wrinkle out of the Roots in this match?
Well, I wouldn't say new wrinkles. I mean, just try and keep on this momentum that they're going. I mean, what would worry me is if Pittsburgh somehow finds their offensive wheels. You know, as Aaron mentioned, I was just clicking around on their last five results here, and four of which they've had only two shots on target. So their offense is definitely not there right now, which always makes me worried because I am just a jaded sports fan who thinks that this is an opportunity for a team to find their bearings. So, yes.
To get untracked, as sports writers used to say all the time.
Right. So, I mean, I would love to see, as Aaron mentioned earlier, Memo back at left back, Azokar in left wing. I mean, I just think it, you saw the fluidity just change in the last match. After the early goal, there really wasn't much to write home about from Root's offense until that 58th minute when Rito came on, goal in the next minute. So, I mean, wrinkles, maybe that's the wrinkle we're talking about, to have Azokar back in the attack. But in the end, I guess I wouldn't be surprised if Formella is back at left wing instead of Azokar. But yeah, if we're talking about wrinkles, I think that's the one I would like to see.
Before we get to predictions, let's go over the sort of nightmare scenarios. What's the worst things that can happen this weekend?
We lose.
John, the playoff scenarios. What is the bad that can happen? All kinds of results. What overarching set of results are we rooting against here?
Well, a Roots loss. We're definitely starting there, square one. We're hoping that our opposition in that last playoff spot doesn't score a bunch of goals to put them ahead.
So the basic thing is we don't want a big pileup, right?
We don't want that pileup at 49 points with an extra team being New Mexico, because we beat El Paso on head-to-head. I mean, really, just target on seventh. I mean, it would be great to finish higher than seventh, right? I mean, of course, that would be such a feather in the cap of Noah Delgado and the job that he's pulled off. But we just don't want that traffic jam at 49 points.
Or 47.
Or 46. Period. We don't want a traffic jam, period.
No. Yeah, unfortunately, it's the case that if we end up with more than three teams tied on any of those point totals, that the tiebreakers may not break favorably for Oakland because of results earlier this season.
Okay, so let me sort of jump ahead a second. The Roots play at 4 p.m. on Saturday, and the next relevant game is RGV Monterey at 5:30 on Saturday. Okay, which means we are going to be well into the second half of the Roots game before anyone else that matters plays. If the Roots are up two goals or down two goals at 5:30 p.m. on Saturday, like, our scoreboard watching is then informed. We're not going to be watching any games before the Roots on Saturday and then thinking about what the Roots have to do in that game. If El Paso lose tomorrow, and the Roots are, that's El Paso's last game. I don't know why they ended up with that game scheduled advance of all of the others. You know, a handful of these teams did. But if they lose tomorrow and the Roots are winning in the second half, you know, the RGV game becomes irrelevant, essentially. So it's not going to be so much like, what do we need to see from the Roots on Saturday other than a win? It's going to be like, or what do we need to see on Saturday other than a Roots win? It's going to be like, we're going to see the Roots get their result, and then it's going to be a lot of scoreboard watching and chewing our fingernails.
So let's do this. Predictions for both the match on Saturday and where Oakland finishes in the standings. John, let's start with you.
Oh, hold on. That takes a little bit of research. Hold on. Okay, I'm going to go out on a limb and say RGV beats Monterey. I'm going to say New Mexico beats LA, and, oh God, loses to Colorado?
Wow.
I'll say that.
It's hard. It's hard to make the table look the way you want it to look.
I'll say that. We can go with that for now.
Okay.
And I will say Roots win, finishes with 49. Man. I'm going to say six.
With those results you've just given us, doesn't that mean Oakland gets seventh and at worst the tiebreaker ahead of El Paso?
It would be what I say, New Mexico wins and loses. So that would put them at 48.
Oh, they have 48. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm going sixth, to say El Paso.
Out on fifth with the tiebreak.
I'm going to say El Paso loses. So they're out. And New Mexico would be seventh. RGV would be fifth. And Roots would be sixth. Meaning off to Colorado Springs.
Off to Colorado Springs. Peter, what about you?
I think John might be right. I think the Roots win. I think they make it really, really shitty for us, though. Like 2-1.
Could it be any worse than last year when you had an MLS 2 team at Laney and they scored in the second minute and then did not score again? And in fact, gave up some chances in the last 15 minutes.
That was brutal.
I don't think it can be worse than that.
Yeah, I think the Roots win. Honestly, I'm kind of feeling like New Mexico might get two draws. Maybe a win and a draw puts them at 48. So the Roots are ahead of them on 49. I mean, shit, I want to predict that the Roots get fifth. RGV and El Paso both lose. I don't think it's true though. RGV Oakland both win. New Mexico wins both. El Paso draws. Roots get seventh and are headed to San Diego. That's the prediction.
Wow. Okay.
That would be the one I want as opposed to mine. I would rather play San Diego in San Diego. Because one, it's an easier trip out. And two, I mean, Roots have done well against them. You're shaking your head no, but I think that a playoff atmosphere in Colorado Springs, regardless of Haji Berry being available, is tough.
The only positive I'll say about going to play San Diego, the only thing that I believe would make a difference with San Diego, is that there will be Roots fans there. I think that folks would make the trip down. But, like, San Diego were a better team throughout the season. Colorado Springs are not the team that they were when they secured third place in the table. Anyway,
yeah, that
getting ahead of ourselves there.
But. Yeah, we are getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, but that is the nature of these predictions. And I would also say that I think we had the same thought when Oakland played Colorado Springs recently. And it didn't go as well as we had hoped. It is tough to predict a win, you know, from a neutral point of view, it is tough to predict a win at Pittsburgh. As a homer, I'm going to do it. I think it's going to be, but there's going to be some clenching involved though. Let's say 2-1. I think that Oakland will get seventh behind New Mexico and RGV and go to San Diego. I do think though that there is, I mean, Monterey Bay is almost certainly going to beat Tulsa. I know that they're traveling to Tulsa, but I feel like Monterey Bay is going to win that match and they're going to have something to play for. Cause I have a hard time thinking that El Paso is going to win or get a result at Tampa Bay. I know Tampa Bay is not playing for anything, but you know, that's the midweek trip over to Florida against a really quality opponent. I mean, one of the better teams in the league. I think Monterey Bay could be looking at the table going into that last Saturday and thinking to themselves, you know, if results break right, maybe we got a shot here. And that's useful because they're playing RGV. And I mean, I could see them putting in a pretty spirited performance there. I do think New Mexico is, I trust New Mexico. I guess that's the way to put it. New Mexico for whatever their place in the table is right now, that's a quality side, and I do see them getting the results they need. That could put Oakland into sixth. It could put them into fifth, but I think it'll be New Mexico RGV Oakland.
I would like to point out on New Mexico just to beat this drum again. I know I predicted similar results that you did. New Mexico has one win since August 1st.
Well, then maybe my trust is misplaced.
Yeah, they have fallen. I mean, they had a 5-game win streak in like May, June, and that's why they're where they are on the table.
Well, that would be useful. Oakland is going to have to scratch and claw for everything here. You know, they don't seem to be getting the breaks. Maybe, though, we're in a situation like last year where they just get a point out of Pittsburgh or something, and we are watching to see if Colorado Springs, who's not playing for anything, can beat New Mexico United. You know, that's a pretty plausible scenario as well. I wouldn't call myself confident, but if I were a betting man, I would put money on Oakland going to the playoffs.
I'd like to just jump in here and say that like 2 months ago, I said on this podcast that the Roots playoff chances were done.
We both did.
And
with non-believers, I'm there with
you,
man.
I'm not going to leave you hanging on that one.
And like both things that needed to happen happened, right? It's like a bunch of other teams utterly failed to capitalize on it. And the Roots turned it around in a way that I feel safe saying no one expected the turnaround that the Roots have had. I think there were other people who believed in Juan Guaita less than I did, but I think few people thought an interim coach is going to turn this team into a 700 winning percentage team against, you know, several playoff teams. But even if results go badly this week for the Roots, I am so thrilled and so proud that the team has made the last couple of weeks feel like the playoffs. I mean, they functionally have been. The Roots have needed to win all these games if they've won all these games, and it feels like playoffs. So anyway, they've done great. I will eat crow. 2 seasons in a row, predicted the team dead preemptively. What that means is that I will be locked on. I'm going to predict this team is dead in the water every season.
That's what it means, definitely. That's what it definitely means.
Well, this is going to be looking way too far ahead, but we feel like we've got to mention at the very least there was a rumor out on Twitter, on the old Twitter machine today, that the Oakland Roots have made a substantial offer to Memphis 901 FC head coach Ben Pearman, who obviously a very successful coach. Our current understanding is that that has not happened and is not in the cards, at least in the near term. So you can write that off. No other insights on the coaching search. I feel though, like, you know, if Oakland closes this season out 6-1-2 under Noah Delgado, you got to think that his name is going to be near the top of the list. We just wanted to mention it. That is all a conversation for another day, hopefully one that will be postponed for several weeks. In the meantime, make sure that your pregame rituals and you know, whatever suspicions you have, make sure your rituals are on point on Friday, that you're wearing your lucky underwear and jerseys on Saturday, because, you know, we're not on the field, but hey, this is a whole town effort. And hopefully we will see you on Saturday. And until then, off the roof.